philosophers. I'm not going to talk about that, but mainly you have two main interpretations of this verse. The main idea is that the first idea and the first viewpoint of Shia and Sunni scholars of Tafsir is that it is referring to one of the events before the Day of Judgment, and it has nothing to do with the mountains in this world. I mean, in this world before the Day of Judgment. It is one of the events that will take place just before the Day of Judgment.
That's right.
And the second viewpoint is that no, it is referring to the mountains in this world, in and I mean our time. So I would like to refer to these two viewpoints, and of course, especially the second viewpoint has different explanations too that I will refer to. As I mentioned, the first viewpoint, which is somehow, I mean, widespread among some of the Shia and Sunni scholars, they believe that it is referring to one of the events before the Day of Judgment. Because in other verses, we have similar notions. For example, in chapter Naba, verse 20, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم وسيرت الجبال فكانت سرابا, and the mountains will be set moving and become a kind of like a kind of mirage. And yes. Chapter Qara'a, verse 5, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, وَتَرَى الْجِبَالُ وَتَكُونُ الْجِبَالُ كَالْعِهْنِ الْمَنْفُوشِ, yes. And the mountains would be like carded wool. So this group of scholars believe that تَمُرُّ مَرَّ السَّحَابِ, the fact that the Quran says the mountains would move like the cloud, it doesn't refer to the mountains in this world in our time, no. We know that according to many other verses in the Noble Book of Quran, just before the resurrection, there are some great accidents and incidents, yes. In this world, the order of the earth would be changed drastically. And one of them is that the mountains would be moving, would be like carded wool. And as the verse in chapter An-Naba reads, it will be moving like a mirage.
Yes.
There are some criticism for this viewpoint, but I do not go to the criticism. In this session, I just try to refer to the viewpoints, and the listeners may find, I mean, the criticism in the papers and the books written in this regard. So this is the first viewpoint. Of course, now the question is that it is referring to the first Nafkh Sur or the second Nafkh Sur, because we know that the blowing in the trumpet would occur for two times. After the first blowing, which is the first Nafkh Sur, all the people, all the creatures would pass away. And by the second blowing in the trumpet, all the people would be resurrected. It seems that those people, those scholars who believe that this verse is related to the Day of Judgment, they are referring to the first Nafkh Sur, the first blowing in the trumpet. At that time, the mountains would have a kind of movement like the clouds.
That's right.
This is the first viewpoint.
And does it exactly refer to the mountains, the very mountains that we see? Or no, it could be, for example, any big stone or, for example, big things. I mean, if you talk, for example, about the lexicography of the Holy Quran, is our understanding, the literal understanding of the ayahs of the Holy Quran, referring to the very mountain that we are seeing?
The word al-jibal, as used in other verses of the Noble Book of Quran and in Arabic lexicons, is referring to mountains. So if you are going to change it to mean like great building, it is against the apparent meaning of this word as mentioned in this verse and other verses of the Noble Book of Quran. So Jabal, the apparent meaning of it is referring to the physical mountains that all the people are familiar with. This is the first viewpoint to refer to the events before the Day of Judgment.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir. Inshallah.
The second viewpoint is that no, this verse is addressing the people.
Mm-hmm.
Because the verse reads, and this is one of the criticisms against the first viewpoint, because the verse reads, وَتَرَى الْجِبَالَ تَحْسَبُهَا جَامِدًا. Now you see the mountains, Tara, addressing the prophet, or addressing all the people. Allah says that you see the mountains. It doesn't talk about the Day of Judgment. You think they are solid, but they are not solid. They are moving like the clouds. So the second viewpoint is that, no, this verse is referring to a reality of this physical world that it has been discovered recently, in recent years or even recent or recent centuries. And now for this, we have two explanations. I mean, if we believe that this verse is referring to the physical world, we have two explanations. The first explanation is that this verse is referring to the movement of the earth around its axis and around the sun.
Yes.
Because according to the science, we have such kind of movement of the planet Earth. So the verse says that if you look at the mountains, you think that they are solid and they are not moving. But mm-hmm. the point is that if you go outside this planet, you see the movement of the whole Earth.
Yes.
And the planet. And you
and by the same token, the mountains.
Exactly. By
yes.
the same token, the mountain also are moving. So this is one viewpoint. This viewpoint is referring to the movement of the Earth. Of course, some people believe that if this is the case, then why Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has only referred to the mountains?
Mountains.
In that case, everything is moving.
Okay.
But anyway, this is the second viewpoint that has been mentioned.
As we know, the mountains on the earth are the highest, we can say, places a person can go, isn't it?
Exactly.
That's right.
Definitely.
Okay.
And then we have the second, we are talking about the second group of the scholars who believe that this verse is talking about this physical world. So the first explanation is that it is referring to the movement of the planet Earth.
Yes.
The second explanation is that some people have argued that tamurru in this verse is not referring to a kind of movement. Rather, murur may be used to refer to a kind of birth, death, and a kind of new birth.
Yes.
And the point is that how we talk about the water evaporating and then the clouds and then rain again, so we have the same cycle regarding the mountains, because the mountains are also created to a kind of due to a kind of internal pressure, or molten volcanic material, or folding of the earth.
Yes.
And then after maybe hundreds of thousands of years, we have the what we call it, erosion factors. They are demolished, and then after many years again we have the creation of new mountains.
Yes.
So some scholars believe that this murur of the mountains in this verse is referring to this cycle of the mountains, that they are produced, again they are damaged, and they are produced again. Of course, it's not a theory followed by many scholars.
Yes.
And the final explanation that I would like to share, and it seems to be more in line with the apparent words of the verse, according to some scholars, it's been proved in science that if you dig the ground, the soil, for
yes.
maybe around 100 kilometers, we come to another layer of the earth,
yes.
Which is separated from the layer on the earth.
Yes.
And in that layer is consisting of some hot and slimy rocks.
Yes.
And now the point is that the mountains on that layer are like wood which is floating on the water or on the seas. So this verse is referring to a very profound reality of the earth, and that is the fact that the earth consists of different layers, and one of the layers is consisting of slimy rocks.
Yes.
And because of that layer, it is as if the mountains are floating on that layer.
And we know that geographically speaking, when the mountains were 3D scanned, the roots of the mountains were exactly on the deep layers of the earth, as you said. Yeah. That's right.
And deep layer, because of the fact that, as I mentioned, it is consisting of slimy rocks.
Yes.
It is as if they are floating on that layer.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems that, of course, as I mentioned, I'm just quoting the viewpoints of different scholars.
Yes.
The dear listeners may think about different explanations, which one fits the verse. But it seems that this last explanation is more in line with the apparent words of the verse. As I mentioned, the verse which reads وَتَرَى الْجِبَالَ تَحْسَبُهَا جَامِدَ وَهِيَ تَمُرُّ مَرَّ السَّحَابِ, which is in the presence, tense, it is referring to a fact which is repeating maybe on a daily basis. So that is why many scholars nowadays believe that it may not refer to the Day of Judgment, because at that time it would only happen for one time, for once. But the verse says, وَهِيَ تَمُرُّ مَرَّ السَّحَابِ, the jibal, the mountains, they are moving like the clouds, and the verb is tamurru in the presence tense, which means that it is taking place every day, not only on the Day of Judgment. So based on this explanation, it is referring to a physical reality of the mountains, and as I mentioned, there are three explanations for this physical understanding of the verse. The first one is that it is referring to the movement of the planet Earth. The second one is referring to the fact that the mountains are produced and then demolished in different stages. And the last one is that it is referring to that deeper layer of the Earth and the floating of the mountains over that layer.
Thank you much, Sheikh Karmi, for a nice explanation about the Ayah 88 of Surah An-Nam, talking about the moving of the mountains like the clouds. It was very kind of you.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much, Sheikh Karimi. It was very kind of you. Really, I enjoyed talking to you. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to us. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Inna fil jannati nahran laban. Inna fil jannati nahran لعلي وحسين وحسن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن
يوسف جلالي بتهران
روباشافت غازا
جروم هيوز بروسلز
سعيد بورزا لندن
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Sayed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
The repercussions of the war in Yemen and the difficult economic conditions continue to take a heavy toll on Yemeni patients. Yemen's Ministry of Public Health and Population held a press conference to shed light on the impact of the continued Saudi siege on thalassemia patients. Those suffering from this disease need to get blood transfusions every 3 weeks and must stay on medication for life.
Our main concern is the lack of medicines for thalassemia patients. These medicines, if available, are very expensive in addition to the lack of necessary medical examinations. We have 20,000 registered patients, while the real numbers are many times higher. These children need special medical care, and we hope that international organizations will stand by them by providing them with what they need.
The Yemeni Health Ministry has recorded nearly 500 deaths due to the lack of only one of the drugs used to treat thalassemia. The ones grappling with the disease seem to be losing hope as time goes by. With their health constantly deteriorating, they are desperately asking for help from international organizations, including the UN.
We suffer a lot from thalassemia. Medicines are not available. We need expensive medicines such as growth injections. We also suffer from a shortage of blood donors, which is what we need continuously.
We greatly need to be provided with important medicines that have not been available since the beginning of the war, such as iron withdrawal treatments. Because our iron level is high due to frequent blood transfusions, which also causes frequent infections.
Saudi Arabia's siege on Yemen and the ensuing shortages of food and medicine is putting more lives at risk every day. The healthcare system is feeling a massive strain, and the international community has yet to take any definitive steps towards ending the crisis here. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
The Italian government has been authorized to send, when it sees fit, military assets, materials and equipment to Ukraine until December 31st next year. The go-ahead has arrived from Italy's lower house, the Chamber of Deputies, which has passed a motion presented by the right-leaning parties backing the government coalition and supported by some opposition groups, including centre-left Democratic Party and centrist Italia Viva Azione. Italy has so far classified the arms it has been sending to Ukraine, but some media have suggested the next package will likely include air and missile defense.
9 months after the start of the conflict, sending weapons to Ukraine is no longer the way to go. We must put peace talks on the table and work all together for a UN-backed peace conference promoted by the EU.
Support for Ukraine has been a contentious issue within the ruling coalition, with Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni positioning herself as a staunch supporter of Kiev. However, her partners Matteo Salvini and Silvio Berlusconi, respectively leaders of the League and Forza Italia parties, have been so far much more ambiguous due to their historical ties with Moscow and President Vladimir Putin. The two have repeatedly stressed the urgency of stepping up efforts to promote peace negotiations.
Giorgia Meloni is firmly and strongly linked or attached to the partnership and the alliance with the United States and with NATO. So I don't think she will do something to promote compromises or peaceful or diplomatic solution.
NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg has recently said, quote, "The Western alliance intends to keep fighting for Ukraine until it wins back all the territory Russia has seized since 2014. However, there seems to be an open wedge between the parliament and the Italian people. Latest polls show that more than half of Italians advocate for peace negotiations between Russia and Ukraine, and only a third are okay with a country sending more weapons to Kiev.
Peace talks must be started now. They have to find a solution to end this war. This situation is dangerously taking us toward a brink.
We are being run by governments of weaklings in the pocket of NATO, and the Meloni government is no different. Our constitution clearly says Italy rejects war.
It's not anymore a war between Russia and Ukraine. It's about all of us. We begin to feel exhausted.
The approval of the motion in the lower house on supplying weapons to Ukraine also included a provision which increases military spending to 2% of GDP by 2028, as required by NATO. The motion is currently under discussion at the upper house. The Senate will have the final say on the matter. Max Civili, Rome.
Back
Pakistan has hosted a dialogue platform for the OIC member states to boost cooperation among them in the field of science and technology. Senior officials representing Iran, Kazakhstan, Tunisia, Qatar, Malaysia, Indonesia, and Pakistan attended the meeting, while Saudi Arabia, Morocco, Turkey, Azerbaijan, United Arab Emirates, and Cameroon participated via video conference. The first senior officials meeting of the OIC Forum was aimed at strengthening scientific cooperation and to encouraging major technological initiatives.
This forum provides us opportunities of bilateral, multilateral cooperation. So one or two or several countries can work together. With Iran, of course, we have a very strong cultural, historical, and scientific collaboration. And of course, Pakistan and Iran can work together.
Iran's Deputy Science Minister, Peyman Salehi, told the meeting that OIC was established to strengthen unity and collaboration among Islamic countries. He offered the participants Iran's cooperation in the field of science and technology.
This collaboration between 15 countries may have a very fruitful outcome in near future. Therefore, we arranged for the first meeting of ministers that will be held, I think, about 4 to 6 months later.
The Iranian minister further said that despite the sanctions imposed by the West, Iran is self-sufficient in the field of science and technology and has invested big in its infrastructure and commercialization of technology.
In 2021, Iranian scientists published about 78,000 papers, peer-reviewed papers in international journals, and at the moment we are in the rank 15 in the world. We have established about 50 science and technology parks in Iran, more than 240 incubators, and so on.
Participants in the meeting discussed in detail the objectives, terms of reference, and working procedures of the OIC 15 and recommended them for adoption by the ministerial committee, which is scheduled to be held in the near future.
The presence of Iranian officials in the OIC meeting shows that Iran is not dependent on the East or the West, and it's ready to boost its political and scientific cooperation with various countries across the globe. Nasir Kazmi in Islamabad.
South Korea's container and cement truck drivers are out in the cold, on strike with no extension to an agreement they say ensures safe cargo transportation and livable incomes. The union also wants tanker trucks, auto carriers, and delivery vehicles included in their deal. The strike action has widened to Seoul Metro Subway, with other transportation workers also threatening walkouts.
Believing in the government's commitment to the constitution and expansion of the safe freight system, we held off the strike and waited. But the system expires in a month, and the government's promise has not been kept. So we had no choice but to bring out our last card, the strike card.
Slowdown in construction and cargo delivery has already caused hundreds of millions in damages each day, with 5,000 truckers off the job. The slowdowns are rippling through South Korea's export-led economy as the strike enters its second week. President Yoon Suk-yeol this week ordered cement truck drivers back to work, with construction companies reporting losses into the tens of millions of dollars.
The foundation of our industries is in danger of being devastated. Even people's daily lives are being threatened. There is no way to justify the act of taking the lives of people and the national economy hostage to accomplish their own interest.
The Yoon administration has vowed to deal sternly with the illegal strike action.
The truckers were on strike just 5 months ago, but that strike only ended with the extension of the safe trucking freight rate system through the end of this year. With the government's back-to-work order, the truckers are threatened with fines and even jail sentences for those refusing to get back behind the wheel. Frank Smith, Weewang, South Korea.
Yemen is on the road to achieving self-sufficiency
with government plans and strategies aimed at doubling and expanding Yemeni agriculture and local food production. On this trip to a Yemeni farmland, I am accompanied by Wajih Al-Mutawakkil. The man is in charge of vegetable production in Yemen. Al-Mutawakkil is one of the government officials leading the campaign to revive Yemen's rich agriculture. He is here to show us the agricultural projects the government is funding.
We are now on the outskirts of Sana'a, right behind Sana'a International Airport, and beyond this point is where Yemen's agricultural renaissance is beginning to take place. Here, there's farmers that are planting crops such as garlic, onions, barley, and wheat. And these are crops that are vital to keeping the Yemeni economy afloat and keeping Yemenis from going hungry during this strangling economic blockade imposed by Saudi Arabia.
One of the ways to counter food shortage in Yemen is through the launch of water-based greenhouse projects.
These are the greenhouse projects we launched. There are about 8 on this farm. These are water-based greenhouses, which means we plant crops using gravel instead of soil. This gravel is extracted from the Yemeni mountains. This greenhouse project is made up of organic natural materials found only in Yemen.
Outside of these gas houses is an even more vital crop being harvested in acres of land that stretch beyond the horizon. Yemeni wheat. According to the Ministry of Agriculture, Yemen imports an estimated 4 million tons of wheat a year from foreign countries. To achieve self-sufficiency status, Yemen must produce its own wheat in order to eliminate its dependency on foreign imports. Farmers on the outskirts of the Yemeni capital are answering the call to produce more wheat.
This portion of the wheat is ready to be reaped, while the rest of the field is going to take another week to a week and a half before it is ready.
I like to take the wheat and grind it with my hands. Then I blow away the flax, and now it's ready for consumption.
As food production increases, many organizations have been formed to help achieve food security. Huan Foundation for Development in Agriculture is one of them. Huan Foundation educates Yemenis on the importance of helping the advance of the nation through agricultural initiatives. Huan also specializes in the production of basic foods from a combination of Yemeni seeds and grains at their local factory. They have even started their own brand of flour and healthy snacks sold in and out of the country. Huan's president believes that Yemen's high-quality agriculture must be revived in order to provide healthy food options for Yemenis and to eradicate some of the diseases caused by imported foods.
International organizations are playing and have played a large role in destroying Yemeni agriculture. They did so by exporting grain and wheat to us, which is often rotten and contains harmful substances like chemicals. Additionally, these grain shipments that enter Yemen have passed their expiration date, which results in a lot of illnesses.
After the revolution of September 21st in 2014, achieving self-sufficiency in Yemen is no longer an impossible task. According to Yemen's Ministry of Agriculture, if local food production continues to increase, Yemen could reach food security in just a few years. The revolution against Western hegemony in Yemen was a starting point towards achieving self-sufficiency, which according to the Ansarullah leader is essential in order to secure food provisions for Yemenis. Yusuf Maudi, the outskirts of the Yemeni capital.
Chile has fallen on relations between Moscow and the Vatican City. The rift has been sparked by an interview published in a U.S. magazine on Monday in which the head of the Catholic Church, Pope Francis, condemned, quote, the cruelty of some minority groups of soldiers, namely the Chechens and the Siberian Buryats, in the Ukraine's conflict. On Tuesday, Moscow's ambassador to the Vatican, Alexander Avdiiv, lodged an official complaint in response. Pope Francis' remarks were made during an interview with America, a Jesuit magazine headquartered in New York. When asked about his apparent reluctance to directly condemn Russia for the war in Ukraine, the pontiff said in response that he received much information about the cruelty of the troops. The Russian ambassador to the Holy See, Avdiiv, expressed anger at the pontiff's, quote, insinuation of alleged atrocities by the Russian military during the course of the special military operation in Ukraine. The ambassador also stressed that nothing can shake the cohesion and unity of the multinational Russian people. The Russian Foreign Ministry also dismissed Pope Francis' comments.
What will the Vatican tell us about the martyrdom of the multinational Soviet people? Maybe it makes sense to first discuss Catholic penance for the 20th century for the Orthodox and for Muslims for the many centuries before that. This is no longer Russophobia. It's a perversion of the truth on a level I can't even name.
Earlier this week, Moscow had welcomed the Vatican's announcement of mediation to bring an end to the Russian-Ukrainian war. Some fear that this could no longer be viable after this diplomatic incident.
I don't think this tense moment will change the Vatican-Russia relations substantially. Moscow still expects the Holy See to position itself as a mediator in the conflict with Ukraine. But whether the mediation takes off will very much depend on Kiev and largely on the U.S.
On Sunday, top Vatican diplomat Archbishop Paul Richard Gallagher had said the Holy See and Pope Francis are ready to provide space for peace negotiations on Ukraine. However, after the announcement, Moscow said Kiev is against any peace talks. Max Civili, Rome.
In the United States, many spent their Thanksgiving holiday not in gratitude, but in grief, as mass shootings and violent crime continue to plague the nation. Many are lost in confusion, trying to explain why there have been over 600 mass shootings so far this year, a pace just below the all-time record. In only Chicago, the nation's third-largest city, 8 people were killed and at least 30 wounded by gun violence over the holiday weekend.
Everybody's always talking about how dangerous the city is, how unreasonable it is to live in America because of how much crime there is. Crime rates are actually about the same. What changes is how much funding are we getting? How many schools are closing? How many resources do people have? And when you actually don't actually invest in this with a growing population, that's, of course, going to cause more crimes.
The Democratic Party is about to hand over control of the House of Representatives, and they are being widely criticized for refusing to pass stricter gun laws when they had the chance. Republicans are likely to defend gun ownership, and they eked out a midterm legislative victory with a major emphasis on violent crime.
No matter what grievances you bring up, no matter what facts you throw at any congressperson, Democratic or Republican, right? Their idea is to fund the police more. But this is money that should be going to the public. This is like, for example, here in Chicago, in 2020, the mayor asked the public, like, hey, how would you like to sort the budget out? And 80% of the people voted that, hey, we should defund the police and put that money back into other things that could really help out the community.
Crime data in the United States is often late or unreported. But what is certain is that since the coronavirus lockdowns, murders have increased by at least 30%. But what statistics cannot capture is the widespread sentiment that the violence in today's United States is more brutal, shocking, and random than it was in years past. While the U.S. is by far the most armed nation per capita, other countries have high rates of gun ownership, but not the regular violence which makes American life uniquely precarious and fearful. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Russian news agencies are saying former U.S. intelligence contractor Edward Snowden, who fled prosecution after revealing highly classified U.S. government surveillance programs, has received a Russian passport and taken the oath of citizenship. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The Associated Press has covered this story. Former U.S. intelligence contractor Edward Snowden, who fled prosecution after revealing highly classified surveillance programs, has received a Russian passport and taken the oath of citizenship, according to Russian news agencies, quoting his lawyer on Friday. Lawyer Anthony Kucherena was reported as saying that Edward Snowden got the passport and took the oath of allegiance on Thursday, about 3 months after Russian President Vladimir Putin granted him citizenship. The reports did not specify whether Snowden has renounced his U.S. citizenship. The United States revoked his passport in 2013, leading to Edward Snowden being stranded in a Moscow airport for weeks after arriving from Hong Kong, aiming to reach Ecuador. Russia eventually granted him permanent residency. He married the American citizen Lindsay Mills in 2017, and the couple have now 2 children. In Washington, State Department spokesman Ned Price said on Friday that the United States was aware of reports that Edward Snowden had finalized his Russian citizenship but could not confirm them, and referred questions about his status to the Russian government. However, Ned Price said the Biden administration would not be surprised if the reports were indeed correct. Mr. Snowden has long signaled his allegiance to Russia. This step would only formalize that, Ned Price told reporters. Edward Snowden leaked documents on the National Security Agency's collection of data passing through the infrastructure of U.S. phone and internet companies. He also released details about the classified U.S. intelligence budget and the extent of American surveillance on foreign officials, including leaders of countries allied to the United States. Edward Snowden says he made the disclosures because he believes the U.S. intelligence community had gone too far and infringed on civil liberties. British newspaper The Guardian has also covered this story and gives us more detail. Edward Snowden has received a Russian passport after swearing an oath of allegiance to the country that has sheltered him from U.S. authorities since 2013, his lawyers have said. Edward Snowden, a 39-year-old, a former intelligence contractor who leaked secret files, was granted Russian citizenship in an order signed by Russian President Vladimir Putin in September. On Friday, Edward Snowden's lawyer, Anatoly Kucherena, said Snowden had received his passport. He took the oath of allegiance, he said. The decision has come at an extremely inauspicious moment. Anatoly Kucherena said on Friday that Edward Snowden was happy and that Russian citizenship would prevent him from being extradited to the United States. He, of course, is happy and thankful to the Russian Federation for his citizenship. He's now a fully-fledged citizen of Russia, Kucherena said. And most importantly, under the Russian constitution, he cannot be given up to a foreign state. Kucherena could not immediately be reached for further comment. In Washington, State Department spokesman Ned Price said the United States was aware of reports that Edward Snowden had finalized his Russian citizenship and said the Biden administration would not be surprised if the reports were in actual fact correct. Mr. Snowden has long signaled his allegiance to Russia. This step would only formalize that, Ned Price told reporters and journalists. Individuals receiving Russian citizenship are required by law to pledge to observe the constitution and legislation of the Russian Federation, the rights and freedoms of its citizens, to fulfill the duties of a citizen of the Russian Federation for the benefit of the state and society, to protect the freedom and independence of the Russian Federation, and to be loyal to Russia and to respect its culture, history, and traditions. Edward Snowden's wife, Lindsay Mills, is also said to be applying for Russian citizenship. They live at an undisclosed location in Russia with their two sons, who were both born in Russia. Edward Snowden wrote in September, "After years of separation from our parents, my wife and I have no desire to be separated from our sons. After 2 years of waiting and nearly 10 years of exile, a little stability will make a difference for my family. I pray for privacy for them and for us all." VOA News has also covered the same story and gives us more detail. Former U.S. intelligence contractor Edward Snowden, who exposed the scale of secret surveillance by the National Security Agency, NSA, has sworn an oath of allegiance to Russia and received a Russian passport, according to Russia's Itatas news agency. "Yes, he got a passport, he took the oath," Anatoly Kucherena, Edward Snowden's lawyer, told the Itatas news agency. Snowden, a 39-year-old, did not immediately reply to a message seeking comment on the report. Russian President Vladimir Putin in September granted Russian citizenship to Edward Snowden, who fled the United States after leaking secret files that revealed the extensive eavesdropping activities of the U.S. government and even eavesdropping on world statesmen and countries which are allies to the United States. Defenders of Edward Snowden hail him as a modern-day dissident for exposing the extent of U.S. spying. Opponents say he's a traitor who endangered lives by exposing the secret methods that Western spies use to listen in on hostile states and on militants.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the pit.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. This is Brother Muhammad speaking to you from the youth station, IRIB English Radio.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I hope you're all doing well. I am Beta, a medical student, and that's my pleasure to be here in this episode.
Sister Beta, I want your opinion on something very important.
Yeah.
With the emergence of technology and this ease of acquiring information
yeah.
And education, do you think we still need teachers?
No. No, I don't believe in that thought, you know. I think there are many people just are telling that, okay, because we have technology, we have robots, we have, I don't know, a smart or something
like
that.
Yeah, but what is the work of a teacher? Essentially gives you information,
you know,
it?
I think we cannot replace them. Actually, I have to tell you directly that we cannot replace teachers by anything. So, and this is my absolute answer to your question. I have many reasons, because one of them is interaction. You have to in the actually communication. And one of the places that you start to learn to interact with other people is school, teachers.
Yeah. But then eventually you also have bad interactions with teachers as well.
You have to see both of them.
The good ones, you also have to see the bad ones.
Exactly.
If you just eliminate the interaction and you get this education, even probably even more efficient from technology, what is it stopping you from eliminating the teachers from the
education
system?
Whatever you're telling me is like, okay, for example, you are telling me that, okay, read this book, it's about driving, and then you have to go to drive. And I expect you to know how to drive, but it's impossible.
It's
impossible.
I'm not talking about training. Talking about education that is more of like, you know, in a class student setting.
Yeah, exactly.
Setting,
I know
the
what
teacher
you
is teaching. What stops you from gaining that same information in education, getting it from a TV in front of you?
Yeah, I exactly understand you. And, I love this interaction.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about my understanding. You know, I'm, for example, from that group of students who just cannot understand anything until one person just explained it to me. Directly, face to face.
So what if that
this
person makes a video when you're just looking at it?
I did it.
Do you know why I'm asking all of these questions? I'm a very good self-learner. I really learn things from teachers. Yes, I understand that. But I really prefer, like, if I have that, you know, that courage and energy, I'd sit down myself and learn it. I'd learn it even better myself than learning it through a teacher, right? So, and one of the I use normally, you know, those course websites where they give you, you know, very, you know, summarized and very good, you know, very well articulated courses, and these are very important and good teachers that have done that. So that really didn't stop me from learning, and I was able to revolutionize my own education system.
So it's nice to hear, but actually I had university entrance examination this year.
Convince me that I need a teacher.
Okay, I try my best to convince you, but you know, I have evidence. I had university entrance examination this year, and because of the COVID-19 virus and something like that, the schools were just closed, and I was like, okay, so I have to study all the lessons myself. I used videos, I used, I don't know, books and different things, but it wasn't that much effective. I have to tell you, for example, if the schools were opened, I would be more and more successful. So one of my problems is that, okay, everything was virtual, and it was okay. At first, I had the same idea as you that, okay, I have a lot of time, I have a lot of ways, I have a lot of sources. But after a time, I understood that I don't have the energy. I don't have the, you know, motivation to go through that. And this motivation comes from, for example, a teacher, a kind of, I don't know, a person, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot find this this motivation in the books or in internet. And I think this
agree.
Is the main reason.
I agree
reason.
That teachers physically do have a lot of effect on your morals and ethics and the way you, and their interactions, their body language itself really
exactly.
affects your learning. But then let me shift the dimension to something different now.
Yeah.
Forget about education, forget about knowledge and information. Let's say we get it through a teacher or not a teacher. What about the subconscious ethics that you learn from a teacher?
But
so
it exists.
Don't you think teachers would have equally a negative effect on us ethically the way they might have it positive effect?
I do agree. I do agree with this part of your speech, but I have to tell you that it is not somehow convincing for me to tell me that, okay, because we have some bad behavior and because we have some bad mentality of teachers and they may affect the subconscious of students, we have to change them or we have to replace them. No, this is not the answer. I think a combination is always the answer. The key. You have to use a combination of both teachers, the human work, and others with the technology. And this combination, I think, will be the answer of future educational system.
Yeah.
Because we need change. I do agree with that part, that we need change, because today there are some people who are teachers who, you know, who are not actually, I think, deserve.
Yeah, that is true.
Dear listeners, go for a short break. Stay tuned.
We'll be right back. This is IRIB English Radio. You are listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back to Youth Station. Now, getting to something even more important. There are some, for example, you mentioned driving.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That is also education. That is some form of knowledge. That is some form of training, and it requires a teacher. For fields like those, I definitely
practical
would,
fields,
yeah,
you mean.
Practical fields. I definitely wouldn't deny that we require a teacher. But with the emergence of things like humanoid robots, that kind of, for example, as doctors, I think they have these humanoid robots
exactly.
that are not, you know, approved yet, but they're kind of either teaching or actually doing the surgeries of the patients. How far do you think we should accept those?
Actually, I think they won't replace human power. They won't replace them. Never, ever. Even 2,000 years later, we cannot say, for example, doctors are all retired and all the robots and something are replaced by them and they are doing the main thing. Because I think we need this interaction. We need this knowledge. We need this kind of power of solving a kind of problem. You know, our brains is somehow more complicated than what we can actually replace it. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm not telling you that, okay, for example, there are many informations that as a person, as a human being, I don't have the power and, you know, I don't have the power to memorize all of them. There is a limitation for my power. There is a limitation for my memory. There is a limitation for everything. But I think the way I can use my actually not useful information to make it useful and solve a problem is the power of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
That they cannot replace by anything else.
What about artificial intelligence? Because now teachers, no matter, we've definitely gone through stages in our life where the teacher would explain and explain and explain 5-6 times until we eventually get the understanding of
yeah.
what the teacher wants to say. With the power of AI,
artificial intelligence,
the computer knows exactly where we have the problem in understanding. It will break down that matter into small pieces and teach it to us. Don't you think that's even better and efficient and time-saving than having a teacher repeating? And then sometimes you also have this ethical issue of the teachers getting angry at you, saying things that you might eventually damage might be, you know.
Let me tell you about a discovery. It is the evidence of a scientific discovery, which they chose 10, I think, babies at the age of, I think, 1 or 2 years old. And 5 of these 10 babies were like, they were interacting with some people from another language. And the other 5 were actually listening to radio, television, and this sort of thing. And after 1 year of actually researching, they understood that the special parts of the brain, which is growing according to the language you're learning, was actually inactive for the group which was learning the language by audios, by movies, and
uh-huh.
so on. But the people and the babies who were just interacting with actually exact human beings and the physical being of them were learning that language. What does that mean? I think this is the need of our brain.
Yeah, but that part of the brain that was not active, do you think was it necessary for it to be active?
So
like
what was for?
No, I'm just saying that maybe that part of the brain that you said it's not active, maybe it's because that part of the brain is used for understanding the different body languages of the
so
person
we need
teaching
it.
Yeah, but
so we have to grow it.
If I get that information without the body language, that part of my brain which is inactive may be used for some better thing, or just it's not useful anymore.
You are telling me that my language is useless?
No, thank you for destroying everything. No. The language, whatever you learn, is actually very useful. But the thing is, that part of the brain that was inactive because you didn't have a physical teacher might be because that part of the brain is used for only physical teaching. And what's the problem in that?
No, it wasn't like that, actually. At that discovery, it was like, okay, they didn't understand the grammar of that language.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and this
uh-huh.
is the problem. And I think this is really interesting because we have to understand that we need human beings. We need
mm-hmm.
our interactions, and nothing can replace it.
Yeah.
I believe in that, and even if one day I read somewhere that I can change anything, I will actually mm-hmm. do the same thought, and I will show all the people that they cannot replace them by the artificial intelligence. Because actually, even at that time that we are so developed, we need more development for artificial intelligence. And this artificial intelligence is not that much trustful that we can go, okay, do this surgery, and we can trust it and go for our own work. Mm-hmm. You know, so we need development for this artificial intelligence at one part, and at another part, we have to understand that we need human beings. We need these interactions because we are emotional human beings. We have emotions, and these emotions have to have answers. You know, this is a need.
Yeah, that was convincing, actually.
Thank God.
It was convincing. I really do appreciate that you really have this strong opinion of having physical teachers for your education. What about for places where sending teachers is difficult? For example, villages in the outskirts and stuff. These people, the only way that they're going to be able to be educated is through internet and technology.
Yeah.
Don't you think internet technology would be able to revolutionize them by learning through it?
I think so.
And with that in mind, so teachers, if they are revolutionized, means that teachers, that technology can do the same thing the teachers can.
I do not agree with that again, because you're not sure that completely they are as the same way they may, you know, they would be if they had physical teachers.
No, I understand having physical teachers is going to be a valuable thing. It's going to be, but like.
So you're telling me we can do actually the absolute systematic, actually artificial intelligence teaching for some places that we cannot, for example, send some physical teachers. Mm. And this is a way, this is a solution, okay? It is good.
But you would still say that if we do have the privilege of sending teachers, if a teacher may be able to make it there, then it's better to have a teacher over there.
Yeah, exactly. Because we cannot do that, and we don't have the capacity or ability to do that, we choose a way which is good, but not better. You know, they are as good as each other, I think.
You see, I do agree with you with having physical teachers. It helps in the ethics and morals.
There should be a balance.
There should be a balance. Would you still agree with, for example, having technology as a supplementary teacher kind of thing? Helps you
exactly.
In learning?
This is
how
this
you
is a
pictured,
I
right?
told you, exactly.
Okay,
and I think we actually drew our conclusion up to here that there should be a combination of these two, and I think one part can be weak without another part. The physical teachers lack something without technology, and technology lacks something again without physical teachers. So if you support both parts, I would appreciate you.
Yeah, after your discussion, I think I'm convinced that
I'm really happy that you're a chemist. I wish that was useful for all the listeners too. That was all the time that we had for today's episode. I wish you farewell. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam.
I am what I am because you made. I have what I have. My love is strong because you are the one I call creator. My alpha and omega, my protector and my maker. Because of you, in weakness I am braver, my defender and my savior, my giver and my taker, abiding in silence with patience and guidance, aware when I need you, the light when I seek you, just forgiveness, the strength in my weakness, and my love is strong because you are the one.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.